Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little piss, my foot on his thigh.
With a chuckle. Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey tennis?
Edmonds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we are in the depths of your feedback ahead of our coverage of From the Oast House Series 3. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
What's rude about a buddy?
Nick Older.
Katrina.
Have you seen her? And Tom Stab.
And then, live on air, in the sixth and final episode of my chat show, I shot a man through the heart with a gun.
So, welcome back and thank you for joining us. As you are probably aware by now, we spend our time picking through Alan Partridge's various projects. We've covered most of them, but we like to stop, pause, smell the flowers, and crucially respond to your feedback before we dive into each new project. So from next week, we'll be covering From the Oast House Series 3, Alan's own podcast. But before that, we need to rifle through your feedback and also look at some of the headlines that Alan's been making since we last joined you, starting with some articles that Tom Dark is going to talk us through.
Thanks for that, Adam. The first article that we want to discuss and also bring to your attention, dear listener, if any of these articles have passed you by, if you're a Partridge fan enough to be listening to this, you definitely will want to be reading these articles as well. In The Guardian, this was... When was this? This was back in November 2023. An interview with Alan Partridge. Alan Partridge on Cars, Canadians and Sunday Roasts. With the heading quote, I'm already about 70% vegan. So this was, I think we had Guardian readers sending in questions, so a bit of a Partridge Q&A or an AMA, even an Ask Me Anything vibe to this piece. So a particular question highlight here was a Guardian reader wrote in, I'm a vegan, what would it take to convince you to become vegan too? And Alan writes, I'm already about 70% vegan. And I have to say, I don't find it that hard. My last Sunday roast, potatoes, carrots, parsnips, broccoli, cauliflower and beef. So almost entirely vegan. Really enjoyed that.
It's an absolutely fantastic Q&A. It's obviously a regular series The Guardian do where you can write in and they put some of your questions to various sort of thinkers and celebrities. I like this vegan one because his answer ends. I don't know why, but I always hear this in Nick's voice saying, be good to yourself, be good to the planet, and go largely vegan today. Which I really enjoyed.
It's the sort of thing that Nick would say.
Yeah. Obviously submitted, I think, 7 questions to this on behalf of Monkey Tennis. None of them got picked, as you can imagine. The other thing I noted about this was that they said they teased this going live, and then on the day it was supposed to go live, it just didn't. And I think perhaps the Gibbons missed a deadline in writing the answers to these questions, because it didn't actually turn up until a couple of weeks later.
I wonder how many people just wrote who invented the skip as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Loads of people, definitely, right? Yeah. Okay, second article I've got here to bring to everyone's attention and to raise for discussion is a big Alan piece in the Big Issue. So this was from December 2023. Alan Partridge on teen years, getting older, and why, in a way, he's always been a chat show host. Now, this is it's interesting, this piece starts as quite a nice kind of potted bio of Alan here, although I have spotted what I thought is potentially a mistake in the bio, but that's perhaps something which is relevant for discussion when we get onto Ace House Series 3, so we'll park that. But yeah, this is almost written a bit like a letter to his younger self. Is the kind of feature approach for this piece, isn't it? So does anybody have anything they'd like to say about this Big Issue piece?
Firstly, like The Guardian, it's a thing that they do regularly in the Big Issues. It's quite nice that you've got Alan sliding into the format that other real celebrities have done before and after. Just one thing, my theory about the authorship of these articles, you remember probably in the Big Issue a few years ago, there was a Malcolm Tucker versus Alan Partridge sort of back and forth piece. And I think largely these appear in the Big Issue because Armando Iannucci is one of the patrons of the Big Issue. So my theory here, especially when you read this article and compare it to the Guardian one, is that actually it's Iannucci writing as Alan for the Big Issue, but it's the Gibbons' writing as Alan for the Guardian, because the sort of the frame of reference, the sort of pop culture references and things like that in the Big Issue feel much more like they've come from Armando's mind to me, whereas the stuff in the Guardian feels like it's sort of on a par with Big Beacon and with Nomad and with, you know, the Gibbons writing. So I think for the first time ever, you've got old school Partridge and new school Partridge writers both writing for the character at the same time. And it just depends which publication you're reading in, which one you're getting.
I think that's a bit of a bombshell theory.
And I hadn't seen it, to be honest, but now that you say that, you can see a difference in the writing style, and we've already seen, touched on, talked about how the Gibbons have kind of carved out their own kind of version of Alan, and they do definitely have a distinctive writing style. And yeah, just some of the references and the kind of turns of phrase are maybe not what you'd expect from the Gibbons, so I like it, and it could be right, Adam.
I think my guess here is that Armando knows that it's a powerful way to get people to pick up the Big Issue effectively. And as a patron, he feels sort of obliged, or, you know, sees that as a good route for him to do some good. I imagine he probably has a cursory note to Steve and the Gibbonses and says, I'm looking to do this. This is what I've written. You know, does it fit what you're up to at the moment? And they say yes or no. And then in it goes to the Big Issue and loads of people pick it up as a result. So, that's my theory on how this goes down.
I mean, it's interesting because, like many things we discuss on these sort of episodes, we'll probably never know the true answer. But, you know, I wonder, because obviously, you know, this all fits in perfectly with the promo plot for Big Beacon with these kind of features. So how much of it is, you know, whether there is a kind of a workshopping thing where, you know, could it even be Iannucci is kind of drafting and the Gibbons are refining it? It would kind of be fascinating if that were a thing, because I don't know how much since probably the beginning of Mid-Morning Matters whether those different writing teams have ever really worked together, if at all. I think there was perhaps a bit of a character handover when the Gibbons first started writing, but something like this in 2023, them kind of joining forces to write a piece, would be quite interesting if that's actually how it plays out. But I do think it's really nicely done. I like the way they do these in character pieces. So, you know, from years ago when you've had him in character on Jonathan Ross or hosting TFI, to these kind of in-person in character pieces in the press as well, even down to, which perhaps we'll discuss when we get onto the Oast House episodes proper, but him appearing in other podcast adverts as Alan as well. I did did everybody hear him appear on the Adam Buxton podcast in character?
No. I don't think I did.
No.
Wow, interesting. Okay, well, we'll definitely...
save it.
I'll make a note of that, and we'll come back to that when we get to the relevant Oast House episodes. But yeah, I do like the fact that they're kind of, you know, it really is adding to the Alan world building or universe building by doing all these things in character. I think it's much more interesting and a much more alluring read to get another piece of Partridge content in character instead of just asking Steve, what was it like to write Big Beacon? You know, I think you have a potentially much more fun and engaging read when it's done in character like this because it's essentially bonus content, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we've got two more articles to cover. The first was sent in by Gary P. Littler. He says, we need a Monkey Tennis debate of this list. This is a lazy collection. Nothing from Mid-Morning Matters. 90% of it is from Alan Partridge. And the link that he shared is from The Independent, where they've essentially compiled what they consider to be the best quotes from Alan over the last kind of 30 years. And I have to say, it's a fairly lazy list that doesn't really... cover the full kind of gamut of Alan. So I am inclined to agree with Gary that this doesn't make for particularly interesting reading. It's the really obvious quotes that you would expect to see. I imagine there's some kind of like SEO ranking. They're trying to hoover up clicks when people search Alan Partridge clicks. It's just doing that job, isn't it? It's not actually any kind of like interesting compilation of the most kind of like undiscovered or genuinely interesting quotes. It's just a bit of lazy journalism.
Yeah, I mean, I've just taken it, just skimming through here. I think I'm down to like quote 30, and it's all from the same series, isn't it? I think there's, yeah, it, very lazy.
Yeah, indeed. And then one more from Random Dawdler, who just says, have you seen this? And this is a kind of a thought piece, an op-ed that's been written about Alan Partridge. And Random Dawdler says, not sure you'd agree. Shame it doesn't specifically mention the Oast House by name. And it's probably worth just giving you a little bit of information on the piece. So it's written by Louis Chilton, and the headline is, I'm Alan Partridge, is 25 years old. Isn't it about time we finally let Steve Coogan's alter ego die? Now, basically, the piece is obviously quite detailed and quite nuanced and makes something of a valid argument. Not that I would agree with it, but I thought I'd just quickly look at the comments section, of which there are 85 comments. And first comment...
Always straight to the comments.
Straight to the comments. First comment is from Tezup, who just says, would it be terribly rude to stop listening to you? And I think, no, Tezup.
Great.
It wouldn't be rude, because I can't say that I necessarily agree with the sentiment of this article. But does anyone else care to give it a balanced defence?
No, I mean, I'll just look at the other comments. I mean, you literally, there's one a couple down. Terrible take. 2016 Sizzle Isle literally won a BAFTA. It was brilliant. Plus, from the Oast House, is consistently hilarious. If lots of people weren't still enjoying Partridge, Coogan wouldn't still be doing it. I think that sums it up more than anything, right?
I mean, this feels like it's essentially clickbait like the list before it. It's SEO work under another topic, isn't it? I mean...
Yeah.
The only kernel of truth, I think, is that the appeal of Partridge when it started out and the appeal of Partridge today are two different appeals. I think, but I also think that's necessary.
Agreed.
The argument here is, he's not funny in the same way he used to be. It hasn't kept pace. Well, I think the argument is that if it was exactly the same, then it wouldn't have made it to 25 years. You know, you wouldn't be writing an article about whether or not it should die, because it would have died a long time ago. I think it's evolved. And it sounds like it's evolved out of the realm of the author's taste, but that doesn't mean that it should die. Doesn't mean, you know, I think anything that comes to 25 years shouldn't automatically be thrown on the scrap heap regardless of quality. Just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
It's interesting as well, because even in the intro paragraph here, that it says there's no denying the brilliance of Coogan's creation. So it does read a bit like, do you reckon Louis Chilton is actually like a massive Partridge fan? And the Independent just said to him, look, we're going to commission you to write something about Partridge, but for the SEO and kind of like clickbait value, it has to be an anti-Partridge
piece.
Make
it provocative.
Louis, if that's correct, get in touch, let us know.
And as we start to move into our next phase of podcasting, which is covering Oast House Series 3, we obviously announced that the podcast was live. And looking at the screen grab here, we put that out on the 31st of August 2023. So we are what? September, October, November, December, January, February. 6 months down the line, finally getting to cover it. So we obviously put that message out, and you got in touch in your droves asking when the our episodes were going to drop. David Bowery said, give us another series, you shits. Daniel Sumpton, does anyone know when New Monkey Tennis is going to drop? I can't wait. Really looking forward to it. Bye. Shelley Raiden, looking forward to hearing how often you all wash your leather towels. Moxie Baxter, I'm sure your minds are tumbling like trainers in a washing machine. We'll cover that. Mark Cheatham, Schnapsy appointed Defence Secretary on the same day too. Amazing.
Great. Huge day for the APU.
And John Wood, I prefer Fern Cotton's Happy Place. Bye.
Yep, which gains even more relevance once we get into covering the episodes as well.
Yep.
Even more stuff from Facebook off the back of that. A friend of the show, Adrian Bavister, said, hello, anyone there? Well, I've just listened to the last episode. It's perhaps been my favourite series of Oast House. They're all good, though. I'll avoid spoilers by not mentioning the content, but I have some theories on some of the stuff that happened. I haven't started on Big Beacon yet. Looking forward to that. Hope the MT team can put together some shows in the near future. I've read there were some telephone Cluedo's tunnel issues, Ghosts in the Machine. Don't worry, Adrian, they've all been cleared up, and you're listening to the fruit of those labours now. He also says, update.
What I like is the subsequent updates here. Yeah. Like every episode he's listened to, it's like a live blog.
Yep. Adrian Bavister returns a week later.
Replying to himself.
update up to the Newcastle episode. I think there's a small joke in the episode titles. New grandchild, new friend, Newcastle. Works anyway. The quality of these is still high. This could be my favourite series of Oast House. Only two more episodes to go. Adrian Bavister writes again. Update. Five episodes in and still really enjoying the podcast. After last season, I guess we'd not get the cliffhanger resolved in the next episode. Still waiting. I have to say, I bloody love the reworked theme tune. Adrian Bavister replies again. I'm two episodes in and happy to report the quality is excellent. To clarify, I'm referring to the quality of the comedy, not the audio quality, which is at best adequate. I mean, it serves a purpose. It's audible. And then Chris Peter swoops in, seemingly just to cut Adrian off at this point, and says, wow, what an ending. And of course, we shall come to that in time.
And is that the ending of Adrian's stream of updates or the podcast itself? could be both.
We may never know.
A bit more of reaction on Facebook as well, which I just particularly enjoyed this, is thumbs up, commenting, WTF, where is this Michael info coming from? About a million question marks, no way. And then DJ Left replied, yes, he's alive. Thumbs up, then said, is he? Or is Alan using this as some sort of segment because he knows how popular crappy true crime and mystery podcasts are? DJ Left then wrote, Partridge Investigates, interesting. I think he should start at comparethemeerkat.com. I just enjoyed that.
Yeah, of course, references to the teasing of Michael and the continuation of Michael's story in this series, which, of course, we will get into in detail in future weeks. We've had some incredible spots sent in, and the first of those comes from Pody Padonk, saying, I'm reading Simon Pegg's book from 2011, Nerds Do Well, and he mentions that in his audition for I'm Alan Partridge, he had to improvise with Steve in character as Alan in full costume 15 minutes before he got the part. Thought that was interesting. I definitely think that is interesting and probably quite intimidating, although...
Yeah.
The Alan really? Profile, obviously not quite as big as it would go on to kind of become, but still kind of improvising in front of Steve, I definitely think that's a gig you're going to be quite nervous for.
I think it's interesting to note as well, I believe that's part of the process that Susanna Fielding had to go through, for example. So I'd assume that is a very consistent Coogan thing. If you're going to get a part in Partridge, you've got to have the improvisational chops to spar it out with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And the next one comes in from Ollie Rishko. Hopefully I've said that right. And he writes, the mega look that Alan gives Maidly in Welcome to the Places in My Life, the only fully exposed magazine on the shelf. And there's an image that we will share on the socials, but you basically see Alan in a newsagent's giving an incredible look at Richard Maidly, who is on the cover of Let's Talk magazine.
Let's Talk.
Yeah, which I mean... This could just be that I'm very much out of the Let's Talk demographic, but I don't believe Let's Talk is a real magazine. I think that cover might have been mocked up and mixed in amongst some real magazines. You've got your Heat, you've got your Hello, you've got your OK. You've also got Norwich magazine on the shelf there, which I wonder is whether that's a real one or not. And then you've
Adam, I'm going to blow this wide open. Let's Talk is a real magazine, I'm afraid.
That's madness.
Just a cursory Google has disproved your theory.
Who's reading that? We need to Let's Talk Let's Talk magazine with Richard Madeley.
But I mean, either way, it does look like that is a deliberate placement so that you get Madeley full face there. I think that is definitely a deliberate thing that the production team have done there.
And I suspect they've done the same with Norwich magazine, which is two magazines over from the Madeley cover as well.
And again, who's reading that? Well, people in Norwich, I would assume. Actually, guys, sorry to just drop another bombshell into the conversation. I'm on the Let's Talk magazine website, and it does say we're sorry, Let's Talk is no longer available.
Oh.
So I wonder when the last. This is like, see when the last episode was.
The Madeley issue was the death knell.
Yeah.
No. It looks like the last issue with Gareth Malone on the cover was November 2022. So RIP Let's Talk magazine, we barely knew you.
Gareth Malone there singing Let's Talk to Sleep for the last time.
Adrian Bannister update, thanks to crowdfunding, it's back.
Well, we've made it 1.5 feedback episodes and this is our first correction. It's been a while. We normally get quite a lot of these sent through. So to get through 1.5 episodes without one so far is pretty good going by our standards. And it's James Atkinson who writes in. And says, I was listening to the Knowing Me, Knowing You radio series introduction episode of Monkey Tennis, which was released in early 2020. In the episode, it stated that the death of Forbes McAllister was Patrick Marber's last acting role. However, a year after the TV series of Knowing Me, Knowing You, Marber co-wrote and appeared in an episode of Coogan's Run, along with Rebecca Front, Natural Born Quizzes, while also co-writing and directing another episode, The Curator. Later in the year, he appeared in Knowing Me, Knowing You All, where he's the other person Partridge punches along with Tony Hares. After a long gap, ignoring the fake Mission Impossible 2 credit, in 2018 he appeared in Trust, the John Paul Getty series, and A Very English Scandal. A correction there from James Atkinson. I am just going to quickly check and cross-reference this with IMDb, and I can see that indeed... I don't know about this. I think the reason that maybe... if you look at the IMDb, the listing for Coogan's Run is actually below Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge in the chronological listing of Marber's acting credits.
But I think that's almost irrelevant though, Tom, because what is the really glaring error here is he is definitely in Knowing Me, Knowing You, where he gets punched along with Tony Hares. So without a shadow of a doubt, obviously that happened after the shooting of Forbes McAllister. So for that alone, we are bang wrong.
Yeah, it's not listed on his IMDb though, so.
So the issue here is the people of the internet.
Yes, let's say it's the people of the internet's
fault.
Blame
the internet.
And we are blameless.
So a roundup of some miscellaneous points now. Random Dawdler got in touch on Twitter to say, where does the clip of the people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast come from? The Wii U's here in Monkey Tennis. I'd assumed it was from the Oast House, but I've heard all of it, both series, and that clip isn't featured. Has Steve himself promoted your podcast? Not sure. Hashtag curious. Well, Random Dawdler, it may come as no surprise to know that Steve has not promoted our unofficial podcast, which I must stress once again is a fan podcast, which is unofficial. However, there was a brief audible trailer from the Oast House, which is where that clip is taken from. Effectively, Steve saying the people who enjoy Alan Partridge really enjoy his podcast. The people who haven't got it still won't get it.
Yeah, I think it was what they did on Audible. I think they put an episode out that you could listen to for free before the whole series came out. And at the top of that episode, there's probably a 1 to 2 minute piece which didn't feature anywhere else, which is basically Alan explaining what the podcast series was going to be. So yeah, that's where that is from. It's probably. I'd imagine somebody's put it up on YouTube or something somewhere. But yeah, there's just a couple of minute segment there.
And very rarely, a question for producer Jed from Matt Stout, who emails to say...
How did this get in here?
What version of I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free do you use for your 1 minute review? Thanks. So let's pipe Jed in here if we can for a 1 minute response about his 1 minute review theme tune. My suspicion is that he is using the version... that was used on film 2005, 2006, 2007, whenever it was, when they used to use this as the theme tune, but possibly a library version to avoid copyright infringement, or knowing Jed, the original to ensure copyright infringement. Caution to the wind, it'll probably be fine.
Hello everyone, producer Jed here. I did in fact rip it off YouTube. I believe it's the Film 94 or Film 93 theme song. It might be a thumb in the eye of Barry Norman, but I think it works really well. See you next time.
All right, moving on. We had an email from Richard Broderick, who writes, potential for lost Alan material. At one point, you guys briefly discussed Ghostwatch. Again, we'll probably have to get Jed back on for this bit. This is a show the BBC tried to sweep under the rug for a long time. I'll take issue with that. I'm not quite sure what he means there, but okay. That put me in mind of the idea of Alan having something similar in his past, either never broadcast or shown once and never repeated, which gets unearthed. I love the idea of Alan bookending it, obviously bigging it up and making it sound more important than it was, and suggesting the hush job was due to BBC cowardice or whatever, when in fact it was deeply racist, or he killed someone, or included an interview with a paedophile, etc. He quotes a fictional Alan, I've never mentioned this before due to a confidentiality agreement, is a great way to get around any law restrictions, and going back in time helps get around the fact that Alan is now getting on in years, assuming they decide to stick to his mentioned birth date. What do you think? And what are your best ideas on the dark reason that such a show would have been hushed up by the Beeb? So I would say, I don't think the Ghostwatch in real life was hushed up. So I don't know if he's trying to say the fictionalized. I don't really understand what the point about Ghostwatch is, to be honest with you. But the idea about there kind of being like a lost Alan show is quite an interesting idea. And I think he's right in terms of that kind of conceit could work in terms of, oh, this is from the archives from the 90s, but the BBC wouldn't let me repeat it until now. But then I think the suggestion that it would have to be around some dark subject matter for it to have this unearthing reason does make me wonder, well, what would it be what would the subject matter be if it was dark enough for that, but also still funny? So I don't really know where to go with this idea, but it is interesting. What do you guys think?
I'd agree. I like the kernel of the idea of having a Lost Alan episode from the archives. And also I think that is a good way to conjure up interest in a new Alan project in real life, more so than anything else that they could do with the character, I think. But two issues for me in executing it. One is sort of to your point, what's the reason that it's been covered by a confidentiality agreement that doesn't make us hate Alan or dislike Alan or see Alan in a very evil or negative light? And also, I do not have a lot of faith, certainly, in the BBC's budget for de-aging. And I think, obviously, if it's from the archives, you're going to have to de-age Coogan, and I just don't think it's going to look good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I didn't even think about that part of it, yeah.
Hello, everyone. This is producer Jed again. Just here to give some clarification on the feedback and the mention of Ghostwatch. I believe the writer of that message was referring to the fact that Ghostwatch was kind of like shadow banned by the BBC. They still refused to play it again. This is mostly because at the time, if in 1992, there was a lot of kind of outrage about Ghostwatch because it purported to be a real documentary filmed live special for Halloween. And they put the phone number, the going live phone number, up on screen, 081-811-8181. And there was a lot of complaints. So there was a follow-up show about a week later where there was a studio audience all complaining about Ghostwatch, basically. So I think the BBC don't really want that heat again. So I think it does relate to the aforementioned secret, hidden, never seen before Alan Partridge show that was discussed. And also, there was a new Blu-ray of Ghostwatch that came out last year, including a Ghostwatch documentary, and I am in it quite a lot. So if you are interested in Ghostwatch, check out the Ghostwatch Blu-ray that came out from 101 Films last year. Back to you guys.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer.
Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Moving on, we have an email from Mike Hawkham, who says, AP fan from America here. I love your pod, and I'm hoping you'll be doing some episodes covering Big Beacon soon. I think you can bet your bottom dollar on that. I had a question for you, and forgive me if you've already covered it and I missed it. So, Alan was born in April of 1955. In the 1999 comic relief special where he holds up Carol's credit card, he mentions that her birthday is April 14th, 1943. That would make her 12 years older than him. He was married on April 13th, 1978, a day before Carol's 35th birthday. He was 23. The only indication we have that she may be older than him is that she had been hymen-free for the best part of 6 years, although that really says more about Alan as a late bloomer who married the first woman he slept with. My question is, do we think that this is an oversight? It could be that they just hadn't worked it out yet, but it would also completely fit with Alan's personality. He has mother issues and would certainly go for an older, more domineering woman right out of the gate. Just wondering if you guys have discussed this. Please keep up the good work, and I look forward to hearing more of your deep dives on Partridge. Lots to uncover there. An incredibly detailed piecing together. And I've always got lots of respect for people that can really kind of get into the details of this. And I think that one thing to say here is that some of this might speak to the fact that the Gibbons and the kind of the Partridge team have employed this archivist that we've spoken about before to try and stop the writers from tying themselves up in these sorts of knots where dates suddenly start to kind of trip people up, as they've just delved so much into the Partridge history. But does anyone have a take on this they wish to share?
Well, what I was going to say is I have a feeling we probably did discuss this a long time ago now, because we did, I'm just looking, I think episodes 47, 48 in the Monkey Tennis archive, we took a look back at all of Alan's appearances on Comic Relief to date at that point. And I'm pretty sure we did discuss the Carol age issue then. However, I cannot remember what we said about it. So if you go back to episodes 47 and 48, listener, you can find out for yourself.
If I could take a second to briefly discuss Carol's hymen. They were 12
Please
years...
Please do, Adam.
They're 12 years different. he says that she's been hymen-free for the best part of 6 years. I feel like that's something that she's told him. I don't think that's the truth, surely. If they're 12 years different, I think it's been more than 6 years. So I think he's been spun a lie there.
Wouldn't be the first time that Carol's spun him a lie either, with her and Jim Greatsex.
And now finally it is time for us to help someone with higher education, someone who's actually writing a dissertation about Partridge. This is very, very interesting. So this is from Samuel Mutter, and he says, I've been an avid listener of all of your stuff for over a year now, and absolutely love all the Partridge goodness you supply. I'm an ancient history student at Cardiff University, and I'm currently working on a Partridge-focused dissertation. Yes, I know that sounds odd. I'm going to be analysing why Alan is funny to us. and comparing him to an Athenian politician named Cleon, who the playwright Aristophanes used as an Allen-esque caricature in his plays. I'm writing to ask you guys if you could give me a couple of your thoughts on why exactly we gravitate to the character of Allen so strongly, and why Coogan's satirically masked messages come through in such a hilarious way. Basically, why do we find Allen so funny? I'd love to reference you guys in the dissertation with any thoughts or opinions you may have.
Can I just start by saying apologies to Samuel, because it's been a long time since we've done a feedback episode, so there is a chance that you sent us this 18 months ago and you've long since graduated.
I think that it, the chance of that is quite high. So
perhaps he can add us as an appendix.
No, full sorry. Yeah. Resubmit.
Adrian Bavister update.
Why do we gravitate to the character of Allen so strongly? I think because there's a number of things. I think there's a little bit of all of us in Allen. I think that he says a lot of things that people think but wouldn't like to say. I think that there's something very British about his sort of grasping for success in such a kind of odd, desperate way. Any other thoughts? I think there's a lot to Allen, isn't there? And there's lots of different reasons over the years, I think.
It's smart humour. It's putting people down in quite a rude way, but written in quite a smart way that it isn't particularly vindictive. But actually what it's doing, 9 times out of 10, is putting someone down. And I think that inherently is funny to most people, hearing someone be rude. And kind of putting someone in their place, but doing so in a relatively kind of smart way.
I mean, I also think there's something to be made of how much the character has evolved over the years. So, you know, I don't think there really is certainly a character in British comedy that has maintained for so long and in so many different formats and projects. And there's also an interesting thing in terms of, I think, you know, the output that he appears in as a character evolves over time based on kind of like the prominent media of the time as well, like the kind of the way the shows are formatted. So not just as simple as he's doing a podcast now because podcasts are a thing, they weren't a thing in the 90s, but even the way that things are shot and the way things are kind of characterized across the eras, I think is always quite closely tied into what's happening kind of in the media landscape at the time. So I think that's part of a reason of kind of like why people gravitate to him so strongly, because I think there's a relation in terms of what's happening in a wider sense. But I think that probably doesn't necessarily speak so much to the satirically masked messages. I think it's quite a hard one to like really put an L on it, because you are basically having to drill down into like what is funny, which is always, you know, it's hard to give a definitive on that. But I think, you know, kind of like Adam says, there's a little bit of Allen in all of us in a way, that kind of the awkwardness of him and the rudeness of him. And I think there's a very overriding part of his character where he's always trying to say the right thing, even if he's not doing the right thing. And I think, again, that's quite a human thing that a lot of people can relate to. So I don't know if the relatability, for me, that's a big part of it, but I don't know whether that quite answers what Samuel is looking for here or not. But like we say, he's graduated now, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and I mean, it is all subjective, isn't it? You know, we've literally just spoken about someone who said that a writer who's saying that the character should sort of sail off into the sunset and go out gracefully, rather than, you know, trying to maintain this character for 25 years and beyond. But also, I think just the quality, obviously. Now, this is less to do with Partridge the character and more to do with Partridge the writers. The quality of the output has just been so consistent over all of this time that and so sort of ambidextrous when it comes to being working in different formats, sitcom, written, podcast, autobiography, etc. There isn't really any character like Allen Partridge that has been so successful so consistently for so long, and it's just because the quality of the writing, the quality of the people involved in it are clearly some of the best and funniest comedy writers that this country has ever produced. And obviously at the heart of it, you have Steve's performance as Coogan, which is nothing other than fantastic in any in any format. So why do we find Alan funny? I mean, not everyone does, but the people who do, I just think it's because you can duck in and duck out. You can watch an episode. You can listen to a podcast, just a little bite-sized nugget, and you'll get something from it. It's and then obviously the supporting characters as well bring something. Alan bouncing off Lynn, bouncing off Simon, bouncing off Michael. You know, it's someone who's trying to do and say the right thing, but yet is put up against people who are constantly annoying him and frustrating him, and that kind of that dynamic between the person who thinks they're the smartest person in the room and the people who he thinks are the dumbest people in the room. He's always punching down, so that can be quite funny in that respect, because he is such a larger than life character in so many respects.
So to move on from four humans answering a topical and interesting and in-depth question, we now move to the other end of the spectrum. We live in troubled technological times, so it was only a matter of time before somebody asked ChatGPT, did Bobby Moore invent the skip? And that person was Run Sir Run. So thank you for getting in touch. He's asked ChatGPT, did Bobby Moore invent the skip, to see if AI can finally put an answer to this. And the answer is no. Bobby Moore, the legendary English footballer, did not invent the skip. As mentioned earlier, the skip, a container used for waste disposal, doesn't have
As mentioned earlier, so they've basically driven AI to the point of desperation. Like, stop asking me who invented the skip.
Yeah, we've been given a segment that probably presumably began quite cordially and ended with the end of AI as we know it. The skip, a container used for waste disposal, doesn't have a single attributed inventor. The skip's development is a result of evolving waste management practices over time. Bobby Moore was renowned for his contributions to football and captaining the England national team to victory in the 1996 World Cup. So thanks for, I was going to say clearing that up, but if anything, it's made it more confusing. But thanks, Run Sir Run, for getting in touch.
On the subject of AI as well, we've had an email from Mark Owens, not Mark Owen, just to be clear. And Mark writes, like a lot of people, I've recently been playing around with various AI apps. I mean, yeah, people are doing it. And I wondered if ChatGPT would be able to capture Alan in the same way as Coogan and the Gibbons lads are currently doing. I entered the prompt, write a monologue about sellotape in the style of Alan Partridge. Attached is what was generated. I'd call it a passable slice of Partridge. Some distance from all-time classic, but I don't think it would stick out to me if it was slotted in somewhere in the Yoast House. The recorded clip is my attempt at Alan's voice. Feel free to use on the show if you like. So, Mark, I think we'll do that now. Would love to know what you guys think of this. Mark, take it away.
Yes. This is something I was talking about. Sellotape. Yeah. For my money, very much the unsung hero of the office supply world. You know, it's like Gary Barlow of stationers. It doesn't get the recognition it deserves. Look at it. You know, so simple, yet effective. You know, need to wrap a present? Sellotape. Need to fix a tear in your trousers? Sellotape. You need to create a makeshift bandage? Sellotape. It's like duct tape with all the macho bravado. And the sound it makes, it's the satisfying rip as you pull it off the roll. It's like music to my ears. And let's not forget the smell. That distinctive smell that tells you you're in the presence of a quality stationer. It's like the smell of freshly cut grass or that new car smell. It's intoxicating. You know, sometimes I wonder if we take sellotape for granted. You know, we just expect it to be there, you know, ready to solve all our problems. But we should take a moment just to appreciate it, to thank it, you know, for all the times it saved us from embarrassment or, you know, helped us to wrap a perfect present. Sellotape, I salute you. And to all the other office supplies out there, you know, you should be more like sellotape, simple, effective, and always there when we need you. Thank you, sellotape. Thank you for everything.
Okay, so that was the first time I'd listened to that before collating the feedback, but you guys hadn't. What do you think? I mean, I guess there are two questions here. What do you think of it script-wise? What do you think of it performance-wise?
I think that's a solid 8.5 out of 10 for the for both, I think, actually. I think that's passable Partridge, I think, is fair, and the impression's pretty good as well. I was chuckling away there.
Yeah, script very good, very much kind of, you know, picking up on all the Alan tropes, although voice-wise, not so strong. It sounded a bit like Keir Starmer.
I wasn't expecting that, that's good. I think, yeah, the noises were good, like the noises were good. But yeah, I think it's script wise that is bang on. Like, you definitely could slot that into Oast House or something, and it's you wouldn't think like, oh, where did this come from? Yeah, I think Mark / ChatGPT and the world of AI have done a good job there.
Right, moving on to an email we've had in from Jamie Parkins, who has submitted a journal entry from 1999 where he has written a treatment for a show idea that he's pitched called Around the World with Alan Partridge. And what he sent in is a picture of said journal, and I'm now going to read some highlights out from it. So remember, this was written in 1999, but from the mind of Jamie Parkins. So the idea was Around the World with Alan Partridge. It was 6 episodes, 6 countries, France, Germany, USA, Mexico, Australia, Africa, ? Against Africa. So it's a holiday zoo TV style program where we see Alan followed by a crew who appear in each episode. Obviously, Alan is crass, insensitive, xenophobic and homesick in each episode. Usually with... is that furious results?
Perilous results.
Perilous results. I'm struggling to read your writing. Either way, ideas for the show include pretending to dive off Acapulco cliffs, which will basically involve a cut to library footage. Great detail there. A constant sunburn gag, a la Bill Oddie. Drug swimming in Australia, unwittingly.
Drug swimming.
Smuggling.
I'm struggling to read the writing.
Drug swimming.
Drug swimming in Australia.
Famous drug swimming.
You could go swimming high on drugs, unwittingly. 4 amigo pictures, but needs to be 3 amigos. I love this one. This is my favourite. Legging it from an alligator. Always run side to side. Remember, they can't chase you if you go side to side. Getting shot at in downtown LA. Interviewing a Hollywood star and getting them confused. Attending a US premiere. It was box office flop. Baywatch running on Venice Beach. Getting pissed at a German beer fest. Stealing the food off a malnourished African.
A malnutritious African, yeah.
Or eating...
I think malnourished African is what they mean, isn't
yeah,
it?
Or yeah, or eating a bar of chocolate, etc. in front of them. So some good ideas and some not so good. And then finally, bungee jumping. Either way, Jamie Parkins, that is very, very good. And we thank you for sending it in. And who knows, maybe it could get commissioned.
Well, I think there are a few things there that are kind of, you know, they feel quite doable in terms of... Just things like the thing about cutting to library footage makes me think of Welcome to the Place of My Life when he's in the swimming pool and it cuts between him like clearly like being in the shallow end when he's actually like almost drowning in the interview segment.
Really good.
So those sort of kind of visual gags do kind of exist in the APU, I guess. An Alan travelogue show like this would be a lot of fun, and I think it's... I mean, I feel like it's probably an idea we've danced around a little bit in kind of not necessarily predict Partridge type things, but in terms of Partridge vehicles you'd like to see, I think there's definitely scope for an Alan travel vehicle. But I mean, I guess as we know, the Gibbons brothers have said, if a fan can think of it, we don't want to do it. Although again, I think when we get to Oast House Series 3, there's a large discussion to have about that as well.
Now it's time to raise the level of culture here on the Monkey Tennis podcast. We've been sent a poem by Mike Olson via email, and his Partridge poem is called Ideas for Programs, and I will read said poem now. This is Ideas for Programs by Mike Olson. Ideas for Programs, Lady Shapes with AP, from fat chubby ladies to fit Sharon D. Inner City Sumo, plump wrestlers in nappies, Alan Attack, Cook Report, but less slap happy. Speaking of cook, let's try cooking in prison. Chris Eubanks Youth Hostels, or Have You No Vision? Here's Swallow of Norwich, a detective most deft. Around the World with Alan Partridge in a bullnose on the left. Arm Wrestling, hosted by Chaz and Dave. A Millennium Barn Dance must not be a rave. Yachting Mishaps with that man who ate chocolate. Rutger Hauer and McDowell. No, no one will watch it. Yes, KMKYWAP's ratings were awfully dreary. Nonetheless, I still want an additional series. Now don't look at me with that face full of menace. Are you sure you don't want to explore Monkey Tennis? Mike, it's an American thing. There we go. Mike,
very
an
good.
American thing, has written us
Super.
A Partridge poem, and that is bloody brilliant. Thank you very much, Mike.
That is 11 on 10. I only hope in the edit, Jed has put some really powerful, emotive, but subtle music to that, just to really give it the gravitas and the heft that it deserves.
Benny Hill theme tune?
I was going to say exactly the same thing. It's just Jed's level. We've heard from James Tovell on email as well, who said, you'll never guess what Lynn's doing now. And he's included a screen grab of an email from a Lynn Benfield advertising the new Tesla Model Y. Stop going on about Elon Musk, you're never going to meet him. Kenko came flying out of my nose when I received this email this morning. Lynn Benfield is now working for a company called, name redacted, trying to lease Teslas. I'm not driving a Tesla Model Y. I'm not driving a Tesla Model Y. I'm not driving a Tesla Model Y. But yeah, incredible. And also, you know, Lynn Benfield is a name that could be spelled a number of different ways, but it is, this email has come from the exact same spelling as the Partridge Lynn. So apparently she's now selling Teslas and finance leases are available.
I can't imagine that Alan's Lynn would cope very well with a Tesla based on what we know about her.
Or sales of any kind.
I'd like to see her try. Yeah. And speaking of Alan and cars, always a good links to be found between the two. We had a message from James St. John Smythe, who writes, thought I should mention that Brendan Coogan, the brother of Steve, briefly presented old Top Gear in 1999 before having to resign following a drink drive conviction. Now, I had no idea about this, so I've looked up some links to a really old BBC News article from July 1999. Top Gear presenter Brendan Coogan has said his drink drive conviction has cost him his dream job. The 28-year-old pleaded guilty on Monday to driving with excess alcohol in his blood. He had been stopped by police the morning after a drinking session. Coogan, the brother of comedian Steve, said he hoped his misfortune would serve as an example to others. He has now left the BBC Two show. Now, I thought that was interesting in terms of it's got quite a similar aspect to Coogan fighting the driving ban a couple of years ago for this Partridge Project, which is still yet to be seen as well. But yeah, I genuinely had no idea that his brother had a brief stint as a TV presenter. Did you guys know that?
No, it's all news to me.
Great. So yeah, here we are. We're at the forefront of breaking news, just 26 years late or whatever it is.
What I also enjoyed is that the link to that article is a link to a very, very old version of the BBC website. And there's some absolutely brilliant stories from...
I'm reading them right now. I'm scrolling through them.
It's so good. And I love that some of them just never
Madonna
came.
Madonna breaking radio record.
Yeah. And so...
Compo killed off by actor's death. Wow.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
Mark, story about Mark Morrison and Gary Barlow.
Yeah, who thought they'd be a duet together? I also quite like one further down, which is where some fans are upset because a Ricky Martin concert has sold out.
So I think we must be in the Ents news section here.
Yeah.
This is all pretty hard-hitting stuff. Julia Roberts to co-produce a tennis story. Stallone Brothers settle movie disputes and other things. It is quite fun, actually, the fact that you can still get to the really old versions of the BBC websites, because you can still find the old Alan Partridge websites from the 90s as well.
Yeah.
And they are so basic, it's brilliant.
It's an update. Adrian Bannister has emailed in again, and he says, with Oasthouse 3, brackets Tranche 2, out, I'm sure there'll be a new Monkey Tennis series out soon.
Depends how you define soon, I think, is the...
There will be one, though.
Anytime.
I'll take this opportunity to leave some feedback on all my Alan thoughts over the last year or so. First of all, in the industry in which I work, the phrase annual payment update is used. So in some of my meetings at work, everyone keeps talking about the APU. Just had to say that. I've been reading Tony Blackburn's book, Poptastic, that you referenced on the podcast. I'm only halfway through and somehow got started on a different book, so I need to go back to it, but I'll share my observations so far. There's a lot of observations, so we've whittled it down to just the top five. There's a foreword by Noel Edmonds. It talks about Cheddar Gorge and Wookiee Hole. Mentions that he likes iterations, strange relationships with women, I wish I'd highlighted more, but basically just reads like the first Alan book. There's a couple of highlights as well that have been pulled out, which just gives a flavour of how kind of similar the kind of writing style is to that of Alan. First one goes, it was impossible not to like the Beatles, if I'm perfectly honest. I'd say that seeing Bobby V at the Winter Gardens was far more enjoyable. He had great songs. I went to see Bobby in Cabaret in London, and he was tremendous, even better than I remember him being first time round. He came out bouncing a rubber ball. And secondly, back at Broadcasting House, I'd settled into my mid-morning slot and even began to enjoy the handover banter with Noel Edmonds without cursing him under my breath. So that is Edmonds and mid-morning and numerous other kind of Alan tropes. I think, have you read it, Tom Dark? You read Poptastic?
No, but I think when we talked about it, it's because John Robbins and Ellis James, when they're on Radio X, they talked about Poptastic quite a lot. And I think to the point where Poptastic, now you can only get it on eBay for like loads of money because it sold out and became quite a collectible. But yeah, it's essentially the blueprint for iPartridge, pretty much. It's quite something.
Right, it's time to talk about Paul Daniels. So James M. emailed in and he said, in the latest set of podcasts, you mentioned the repeated reference to Paul Daniels. Hopefully this email can shed a bit of light on this. Over many years spent on eBay, I've built up a collection of books considered the worst ever. A disproportionate number of these are the autobiographies of celebrities who have a bizarrely high opinion of themselves. These are the exact sorts of book that iPartridge parodied. I have A Likely Story by Rodney Bewes, one half of the Likely Lads, who spends a chapter explaining how going to a pantomime in Brighton was more important than going to his mother's funeral. After all, it was quite windy that day. I have Sing Lofty by Don Estelle of It Ain't Half Hot Mum fame, a self-published autobiography so dripping in resentment for everyone else that it almost makes you forget about the several spelling errors contained on almost every page. And I have Under No Illusion by Paul Daniels. Without a doubt, the Gibbons and Coogan had Under No Illusion in front of them when writing iPartridge. I can cite so many examples, but the most obvious is probably how both Daniels and Partridge describe their own birth in bizarre terms, as if it were consequential to world events. This is from iPartridge. Look, Anthony Eden's about to be named Prime Minister, mutters a nurse as she strolls past the door. And Chelsea are about to win the First Division title, replies an orderly, almost certainly not educated enough to follow politics. And this is from Under No Illusion. The nation is on the brink of catastrophe as World War II approaches and Prime Minister Chamberlain promises peace in our time. 1938 also sees John Logie Baird demonstrate his first colour television set in the UK, whilst fluorescent lights, a non-stick substance called Teflon, and Superman are invented in the USA. The first children's zoo in London's Regent's Park opens to whoops of delight, and 3 weeks after Hitler claims Austria, Paul Daniels enters a troubled world with a shout.
I think what James is saying here about building up this collection of books considered the worst ever, I feel like that's exactly what Steve and the Gibbons brothers have done when they were putting together the right partridge, haven't they? I feel like they've definitely lent on Poptastic as much as they've lent on Under No Illusion, I would think, based on that.
Quite interesting as well that Don Estelle is mentioned here, as there's some feedback to come. Which revisits Don Estelle and his desperate attempts to sell this self-published autobiography. But first, it's time for Christmas Morning with Noel, 1988, thanks to an email from James Musselwhite, who said, rewatched over Christmas Morning with Noel, 1988. At the 1 hour, 1 minute, 30 seconds in, Noel takes a call from a viewer who wants to purchase his sweater for £1,000 with money he's going to children in need. He then, out of nowhere, goes on to promote his prestige car business in Hungerford. Link attached. I think we're going to play a little bit of this clip in now.
Seeing you're on the line anyway, would you like to say Christmas, Happy Christmas to anyone?
Yes, I'd like to say Happy Christmas to you and my family and my wife who are here at home with me.
Lovely.
It's not actually a personal donation. It's from my partner and I from ME Prestige Cars. And not a plug.
We have somebody
interested in your GT40.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to be aware that these kit cars are not worth quite as much as original cars.
All right, I better go now. We're going to have to leave. Thanks very much for the bit.
Okay.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Well, it's been an absolutely marvellous morning. Thank you for the part that you've played in it. I've had a marvellous time. The tissues are getting a whacking over here. But isn't that what Christmas is all about?
James goes on to say, it all seemed a bit pre-planned, as if Noel knew the guy. I just thought it was quite Partridge, particularly the Rover dealer in Knowing Me, Knowing You All. it'd be in the right area time-wise for writers like Iannucci and Bainham to draw inspiration from. I think you're absolutely right there, James. I think we've had a lot of this section of feedback is absolutely nailing the influences that a lot of Partridge writers have been drawing from.
Yeah, and I can only imagine in 1988, compliance was not a word that was being banded around the BBC, so you could basically crack on with stuff like this.
And whilst we're on Edmunds, we should probably celebrate that there was a thread of horror of Noel Edmunds' share on the go on Twitter not that long ago. And I think we picked out one of our favourites from this and shared it on the Monkey Tennis socials. As we declared it, a Champions League level accidental Partridge here from Edmunds. So this is taken from the multicoloured Noel Edmunds annual of 1979, Noel Edmunds on the first moon landing. So Noel writes, July 21st, 1969 was a big day for mankind and Noel Edmunds. At 3:56 a.m, Neil Armstrong took his first historic giant step forward and became the first man to set foot on the moon. And a few hours later, at 8:15, my dulcet tones were heard for the first time on Radio 1. Mind you, I could hardly claim to be pushing back the frontiers of broadcasting progress. My anonymous voice was heard for less than a minute announcing details of a competition. But, needless to say, as far as I was concerned, it was an achievement against which the moon landing paled into insignificance.
That's delicious.
That's amazing. Is brilliant.
Thank you to Sarah Dempster, Dempster2000 on X or Twitter, if you like, who first brought that to our attention. I like that even in the first sentence, he set himself apart from the rest of mankind. right.
Oh, that is glorious. I also like the use of needless to say as well. You can see the seeds that are being planted there.
It's time to talk Nazis or Nazis. This comes from Bradley Windsor. Writes, having just been re-listening to From the Oast House of Alan Partridge and various episodes of your podcast for the umpteenth time, I have been puzzling on Alan's pronunciation of Nazis or Nazis. If you check minute 27 of Goldfinger, Connery pronounces the word in the same way Alan does. Is this perhaps yet another Easter egg linking back to Alan's Bond interest and in particular this particular film? I'm going now and I don't need a reason. Bye. thank you, Bradley. I don't think we've got a clip of that to reference, but if that is true, that is a great spot.
Yeah, I think it's highly likely that there are things such as pronunciation in Alan's world which are very deliberate throwbacks to things like Bond. So, yeah, I think that is bang on the money.
To carry on the Bond theme, not the Bond theme, we're talking about Bond.
It's a Bondathon.
It's a Bondathon. John C. has sent us an email regarding Alpha Papa and Roger Moore. And he says, I'm not sure if this has ever been mentioned in one of your roundup shows, but there is possibly a very nice Roger Moore link in Alpha Papa. The ruddy, awful breakfast host is called Danny Sinclair, and whilst admittedly that's a common enough name, surely it can't be a coincidence that it's an amalgam of the two lead characters from the 70s nonsense show The Persuaders, starring Tony Curtis as Danny Wilde and Sir Roger as Lord Brett Sinclair. I think we can all agree that the rightful adoration of Roger Moore is one of the very few Coogan yes, Alan yes issues in the APU, and it feels too much of a coincidence. I appreciate this may be shockingly wild speculation, but isn't that the whole point of Monkey Tennis? I enclose below a shot taken from the series, and I'm very surprised. And I'd be very surprised if there isn't a framed version of it hanging in the Oast House downstairs cloakroom. And it's a picture of Roger Moore in a lovely scarf there, with a next to a table with some champagne and a fruit basket, I think. And the table is adorned with a Union Jack.
So we'll pop that up on the socials as well. I mean, yeah, that is... You can definitely see the, again, the inklings of Partridge there, I think, also.
I did promise you we'd return to the hot topic of Don Estelle from Thank The God. 8.5 Hot Mum. And James Atkinson has done just that with an email that says, the British Comedy Guide featured an article on It Ain't Half Hot Mum or actor Don Estelle, which mentioned that in a bid to sell more copies of his self-published autobiography in 1999, that he'd turn up unannounced to shopping centres with a suitcase and then proceed to sell copies of his book along with his CDs while singing his songs. I do wonder if this may have been the inspiration for Alan trying to sell copies of his book along with a free Danko nightstick in the colour of Alan.
Brilliant.
And he sent us a picture of one of Don Estelle's personal appearances, which I would say is the very definition of DIY. I'd go as far as to say it's almost punk. We'll put a picture of that on the socials so you can judge for yourselves.
Yeah, that photo of Don Estelle is brilliant. It really does remind me of Alan trying to sell bouncing back at the Danko nightstick. And interestingly enough, speaking of that episode, The Colour of Alan, Daniel Moore got in touch on email to alert us to a video that he just shared on YouTube, which is a studio audience recording of the Colour of Alan episode. So this is essentially a studio audience bootleg that somebody made. So Daniel writes, just shared this on YouTube and I think you guys will appreciate it. It wasn't me that made the original recording. I got this from someone who recorded it on a dictaphone in the audience and shared clips on a forum many years ago. I figured it was high time I got around sharing it. So we'll pop the link to this in our show notes and in socials where we can. I think definitely an interesting listen for the Alan completist amongst us. So what you hear on this recording is the entire kind of studio experience, as it were. So the warm-up comedian before the recording starts, you have him at the very top of it and you kind of have the actors kind of explaining how the shooting is going to work. So obviously, quite famously, you couldn't always see all the action on the kind of stage, as it were, the way they filmed these, because they had like three walls in some of the scenes and stuff. So they're kind of talking through that. So yeah, a very punk dictaphone recording bootleg of Alan live in the 90s there. Yeah, so we'll put a link to that YouTube video in the show notes and on the socials where we can. Definitely a bit of an unearthed gem there. Yeah, quite an interesting listen, if you like that sort of thing. And then just a very short message that we had in recently from, I think this must have been on X or Twitter, from Stephen Wickham Actor. And Stephen writes, "Hello chaps, fancy a chat, worked with Armando, Don Brickstock and been in the Bill and Casualty." So, you know, obviously Stephen knows that we are fans of the Bill and Casualty, being part of the almost holy trinity of TV acting jobs in the UK. But Armando, obviously, we know who that is. Don Brickstock, I think, was a director on a lot of early Partridge projects. So, yeah, Steve, we'll drop you a line and maybe we'll get a bit of a Q&A going on at some point. Thanks for that.
Okay, so we're nearly at the end of the show. But before we go, we've had a predictor Partridge in from AIDS Brain. And the prediction for the future, they will do a prequel. Before he was a famous type thing, and it will be a technological wonder. I feel like coincidentally we have touched on the potential challenges that the BBC might face through de-aging, but maybe if Disney Plus or Netflix were to pick that one up, then the de-aging process might be slightly better. So all depends where the rights sit, I would say.
Another way they could make this work is if it is a Pear Tree production. So it's actually Alan creating a show about the beginnings of his career, where they'll use the fantastic de-aging process that we saw them use when they made him a little schoolboy in a previous previous flashback of this time.
Well, you could do it a bit like a young Alan, where you just have a completely different actor, which I think might be something we've talked about in the past. You know,
yeah.
Young Indiana Jones, young Alan Partridge, completely different actors for that, but I don't know. I feel like to have an Alan project without Coogan being Alan probably wouldn't work. I think you're missing quite a key component of what we know and love about the character there.
Absolutely, yes. And before we go, it's just time for my favourite part of the episode. It's bank holiday weekend. Who's with you? What are you doing? Without further ado, Jed, could you start to play in the music? I'll kick things off. We'll go around the group and hear what you've submitted to us. So I'm going to start with Sean Whelan, who says, "My bank holiday would be a horror marathon with Mark Kermode at the Prince Charles Cinema."
Daniel Buttress says, "I'm going to the Didcot Railway Museum with Ringo Starr before joining James Corden at Cheveley Services on the M4 for a Ploughman's and a flat white."
Michelin has said something so specific to the area I grew up that I have to assume they are a Newton Abbott or Bobby Tracy local. She says, "Going to the Marble Museum in Bobby Tracy with Chris Hakabusi. After that, we're off to buy a mini fridge at Trago Mills." Literally, those things are all within a 3-mile radius. Brilliant.
Jeremy Atkinson says, "Chopping down trees and digging up my garden with Lily James."
Dave Plays Drums says indoor mini golf with Samantha Queck. Bye.
John Paul Wilmer, Gangway bakes and a cup of strong tea from the porthole in Muddersley, followed by a relaxing afternoon watching Zulu on the sofa with Penny Mordaunt.
Thumbs Up Thumbs Up says going around the Morgan Motor Car Factory in Great Malvern with Fiona Bruce, then for a lovely cheese and ham panini in a country pub, all washed down with a pint of t'other. Bye.
Cold Wilderness says monkey drive through at Longleat Safari Park with Michaela Strachan. I'll insist she goes halves on any damage the monkeys cause to the car.
The Avant Gardener says, I'm dry lining the shed, but Holly Willoughby is popping over with her Haikoki nail gun. Jaffa cakes will be provided.
Harwin123, binge watching old episodes of Grand Designs with George Clark whilst he wallows in his resentment of Kevin MacLeod and his success. After calming him down, a slap up chippy tea with a sticky toffee pudding to cap things off. Lovely.
God, that actually sounds great.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Thanks, as ever, for all of your feedback and especially your bank holiday suggestions. Do keep it coming and we will feature them in future episodes. But we're going to dust our hands off of your feedback for now and prep ourselves, steel ourselves, to dive into From the Oast House Series 3, which we will start tackling next week. If you want to get in touch with us, it's Instagram at @TheMonkeyTennisPod, Twitter at @ThePartridgePod, Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod. You can email thepartridgepod@gmail.com. And whilst the Monkey Tennis hotline is on hiatus, we would love to hear your voices. So please do email us a voice memo. We may work that into a future episode as well. Plus all the good stuff. Follow, subscribe, give us some stars in Spotify or Overcast. Tell a friend, share an episode. Just have a nice time. So we will see you next week for more Partridge. But until then, from Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
Get a room.
I'm hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha!
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle. Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.